Talking today about the bridge from boyhood to manhood.
Brandon. Apparently, I'm Johnny's entertainment.
Well, yeah. I mean, you always do the air drums, and for a minute there, I thought you weren't going to do it. So
he wasn't. Yeah, he wasn't. These morning recordings, as you'll hear the birds chirp, are out on my back deck. Brandon's just not awake for him. I don't know. You're the early riser,
I'm
too.
Wide awake. What are you talking about?
You've been up since like 4.
Making sure I had the guest questions pulled up. That's all.
Jeez.
Ned. You got to entertain us. Come on. No.
Dance, Brandon, dance.
There's a song about that.
There is.
Dance Monkey Dance.
Oh, yeah, there is. Man, you're pretty...
I'm hip.
Yeah, that's pretty current, man.
Is it?
Tommy's relevant. Oh, okay. He's relevant.
I have no idea what he's talking about. How irrelevant I am.
I actually think it's back out of style, but that's all right. I've at least heard of it.
Yeah, that's thinking of the old movies where you start shooting at his feet.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll welcome everybody to the Just Dads podcast, JDP, if you will. Hit us up on our socials at Just Dads Podcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and then there's an email, justdadspodcast@gmail.com, which I did write this time.
Well done.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
That earns an early with that.
I got too many uhs already, so sorry about that. We're working on a topic today. The bridge to manhood is something two people have gone through.
Yeah.
Oh, the first rule of podcasting. Come on.
Got a newbie.
Phone's ringing. Phone's ringing. It's his wife. He's in trouble. or a rite of passage.
Another, or
if you want to think big term, like I think some really people have heard of a rite of passage. Mm. So we'll get into what
coming of age.
Coming of age, yeah. We'll kind of unpack that. So.
But with that, we actually do have a guest to help us explain, talk us through, teach.
Yeah.
All the above, Mr. Joe. You heard his voice there. He was shooting at Brandon's feet there a second ago. Yeah.
Yeah, we got Brandon and John on the podcast.
Oh, yeah, we do. Yeah, I know.
It's okay.
We're old news.
Joe's more exciting than
Joe is
for sure. So,
well, Joe, how's it going, man?
Good morning. Going well.
Thanks for joining us. I guess we could start with, who are you? You got dad credentials, any of that fun stuff?
Yeah, a little bit. So, Joe Freiberg. I'm a father of two sons, 17, 19-year-old guys. I've been married for about 25 years, so kind of held on for a little while till we had them. We're kind of more or less focused, but what else? Military guy in my early years, moved around, lived all over the world a little bit, which kind of informed some of our experiences a little bit. But a lot of what we're talking about today are these two guys that I put so much time and effort into, and I'm pretty much ready to give them the boot, tell them to get out of the house now.
There you go. How long you lived in Cincy?
I moved here when I was in, I was about 12 years old, but we've come and gone many times since.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
You know, when I joined the military, I left and then came back and went to school, and then with this company I'm with now, then I've come and gone multiple times.
Okay.
So I'd say I call Cincinnati home because I've lived here longer than any other one place, but the course of my life have been probably more nomadic than anything.
Gotcha. Okay. Fair enough.
Brandon was almost in the military. He was in the Navy.
That's a close second. From what
goodness.
I
just played dress up, huh?
Wow. Played with his boats.
Goodness.
Just kidding. Yeah. Thank you for your service, both of you.
Well, I have to say, so we don't have any Army or Marine guys here, so we don't have to listen to it, frankly. I was in the Air Force, which they affectionately called the Chair Force.
Among the Chair Force. That's true.
But, we lived well.
Did you go to vet camp? I can't remember.
Say it again.
Did you go to vet camp?
I did.
Yeah, that was all the inner service ribbon there was fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, even coming from the stage, like it was all over the place.
But you know what? It's funny. So I had a number of family members, friends of the family, who were all kind of Marines, and I was thinking when I was that age, Army, Marines. I'm not really sure. And every single one of them, without question, said, "No, seriously, don't. don't do that. Huh. Go in the Air Force. Like, you'll live well. Like, you're going to live far better.
Yeah, when I was stationed in Charleston, we would drive over to the Air Force base for the golf course and the amenities and the barracks were nice. I mean, everything was nicer over there. PX was nicer, all that.
Yeah, yeah. We live well. It wasn't quite some of the same intensity, but we lived well. It was a good time.
Yeah, but like with any service, you could have people sitting at a desk and you have people in front of the line of fire. It just depends on what your job is, you know, so. Yeah, no, my dad was Air Force. I have a lot of respect for it, even though it is the chair force.
They're all just, right. All the other branches are just jealous.
That's right.
They are. That's largely it.
Listen, you can call it all day long what you can say about your services, but only one has the Navy SEAL, so we'll move on from there. All right. You ready for your guest question? So
the Rangers don't count?
Just saying. Just
saying. So these guest questions that Brandon's going to run you through, this is kind of like your basic training for the podcast.
Gotcha.
So,
okay.
But it'll be a lot easier, I think. Or at least easier than, I don't know, the Air Force. But
all right. All right, here we go. Rapid fire, cat or dog?
I like dogs, but we have cats.
That's an interesting answer. That's an answer.
My wife likes cats.
Yeah, there you go. There's the answer. Okay.
Enough said.
Enough said. All right, morning person or a night owl?
Oh, morning person, no doubt.
Yeah. Always or
always
after the military? Okay.
Always, my whole life.
Nice.
Super early.
I think I know the answer to this one. Would you call it soda or pop?
Soda.
Yeah, that's what I figured, not being from here. Do you like reading books or watching movies?
Reading books.
Okay. Any, I'm just kind of curious, any favorite author or series that you're into or?
My favorite all time is Steinbeck.
Oh, John Steinbeck.
John Steinbeck. I know the name, but I can't think of the book.
Mice and Men.
Oh, right. Rapes of Wrath, yeah. Mice and Men. Oh, right. Yeah. Eden. All time favorite.
Nice.
Fantastic.
Sweet or salty?
Salty.
See, that's a question people know. It still blows my mind. All right.
You are the outlier.
I don't know. Anyways, breakfast or dinner?
Breakfast.
Okay. That tracks. Burgers or pizza?
Burgers.
Okay.
There's protein there.
What's your favorite? So what'd you say?
There's protein there.
Not in pizza.
You sprinkle some protein on. Right.
Yeah. Sprinkle some protein.
Get some pepperoni.
He's putting protein passion powder on his pizza.
I'll take half mushroom, half protein.
Your favorite drink?
Beer. German Hefeweizen.
Oh,
there you go.
That's cool.
My time in Germany.
Oh,
I learned this.
Sehr gut. Das ist sehr gut.
Das ist sehr gut. Yeah. Yeah. When I went there and it was legal for me to drink and somebody introduced me to that, and I thought, oh my gosh, where have you been all my life?
Cool.
That's a Lebo.
All right. Let's see. Do you have a favorite season?
Fall.
Fall, for sure.
Yeah.
I like that. Quick answer. Favorite sport to watch?
Amateur wrestling. I'll be really clear. Not professional goofiness, right? Well, I mean, those guys are athletes.
Careful.
Those guys
now.
Are athletes, right?
It's an entertainment network.
They take a lot of steroids to make sure they look good.
But they are impressive athletes.
Yes, they are. I mean, agile as it gets.
Yeah. Right? I mean, and their pain tolerance and everything they got to do for it. Like, I got a lot of respect for those guys.
Yeah, that's you know, I have respect for those guys. Not my thing, but I wrestled all through school. So,
nice.
You know, right now it's kind of awesome watching the Olympic team forming and the NCAA champions kind of just finished up the thing. So that's what's fun to watch.
So I wrestled as well. I always found it interesting because we did, it's called considered folk style in high school, right?
Yeah.
But the Olympics is Greco-Roman?
Freestyle and Greco-Roman,
Did you have a preference between?
Freestyle.
You like freestyle best? Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So after we're done, are we going to go out?
No. You, sir, would whoop me. all right. Well, I don't. Do you have a favorite team to watch? I guess USA at that point.
Well, he's allowed to watch other sports. Yeah.
He could still have a favorite team in a different sport.
Sure.
Actually, I don't watch any other sports.
Yeah.
Even when I was a kid, I never really got a big kick out of watching sports. I like watching my sons play sports, but outside of that, I don't really have any. Now, it's fun to go to a game, right? I don't care what the sport is. Mm-hmm. It's fun to go to a game or match, whatever, but I'm not going to watch it on TV otherwise.
My buddy James isn't a big baseball fan, but he went to a Reds game this week where we stomped the Pirates 12-4 or something like that. He's like, it was fantastic. If you don't love sports, it's still fun to go sometimes. So. Right.
Especially if you're crushing the other team and scoring a bunch of runs. Yeah. Those 1-0 games that drag on, they can be.
Yeah.
You got to enjoy the peanuts and the beer.
Yeah, and the people you're with.
Right. Yeah. Got to have good company.
Anytime a Cincinnati team dominates a Pittsburgh team, I'm happy. So.
That's fair.
That's a fair, a solid point right there. All right. Do you like eating mushrooms?
Yes.
Does your wife?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So he's like,
what does that mean?
Yeah. The reason being, we have a couple's theory. It's called the mushroom theory, that within a couple, one will like or tolerate and one won't eat them at all. So we've been pretty consistent with it, 80-90%. So yeah.
No, I had to learn to like them, though. So when
a little further.
Yeah.
So when we met, she was in college and she was actually doing some of her dissertation work on mushrooms.
I feel like that's an outlier for scientific reasons.
Yeah,
that's a definite outlier there.
All right. So you learned to love them later in life,
of your relationship. All right. All right.
Yeah, I wanted to be married to her.
Yeah. All
right. So organically, he does not like
the
them.
Theory. There it is.
If it weren't for his wife,
historically and genetically,
his DNA makeup says right. No. Yeah.
Check in the box. Yeah. Yeah. Theory passed.
We're
right.
gonna make this theory fit everybody. Whether you want to or not,
we're gonna find a freaking way.
Say you like mushrooms, you don't really, right? Yeah,
in a deep level, in your dreams, you don't know.
Okay, well, we nailed that. That's good.
How have we had two people that are like mushroom experts on the...
Yeah,
like,
for real.
I mean...
That is so random.
What are the odd thing?
Yeah,
so,
that's true. Yeah.
Anyway, mushroom aficionados. Apparently, they're more prevalent than we thought.
It's a thing.
Apparently.
They'll save us when the grid goes down, so...
Sure.
Here we go.
Fungus.
I have no idea how to identify mushrooms. Won't help at all.
You only make the mistake once, though.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
You'll either be satisfied or dead. Yeah. So.
Or on another planet. Yeah. Depending on which one.
It's good morning already. Yeah. Nice cool breeze out.
All right. Well, we'll get into the real topic on the other side.
All right.
Got a couple chuckles in.
Caffeine's kicked in.
Take it home, Brandon.
No. Okay.
Oh, man. All right. So we are going to talk a little bridge to manhood. So all three of us. What? What are you pointing at?
Sorry. You're not recording.
What? Oh, I'm recording all over right, here. So I guess I should record now, but it doesn't matter. We're recording over there. So bridge of manhood. So actually all four of us at the table have sons. So if you have a son out there, I think this could apply. I think you'll find out that if you know somebody, one of your good friends has a son, I think you potentially could play a role that way as well. So it doesn't necessarily have to do with your son in particular. Mm-hmm. So, and I think maybe you'll identify it as you, if you're a man, if you grew up, there is some version of this transition between the world of boyhood and the world of becoming a man. So I don't know. Johnny, you got any thoughts?
Well, I was going to say, I think for me anyway, I don't know that I had anything like this concept that we're going to talk about today. I don't recall there being any sort of a delineating mark or, you know, formal transition. So when Joe, our guest today, first shared this idea and I heard it from him, I thought, this is like good stuff. This is gold right here. So I'm excited to have him here and share what he's been doing, and really he's an advocate for this concept, I think, of having a rite of passage, and maybe we just kind of dive in and just Yeah. Explain from your perspective, Joe, what is this? What's a rite of passage and why do we even bother? Like why are you such an advocate for this?
Yeah. So I guess if you ask the question, what is it? What do I think it should be? Cause yeah. I think if you look around in the world and over history, these can take various forms and so on. Some of which are kind of nuts, dumping your kid in the woods 20 miles away and tell him to get home. And if he gets home, he's a man. If not, he's dead.
Yeah. Or found the mushrooms.
He goes mushroom hunting. So the way that I see it is there's a couple elements to it. One, it's a marking moment to recognize that from this moment forward, something's different. And recognizing with your son that I expect something different. I think there's that marking moment and something that's incumbent upon us as fathers is to help them understand, well, what's it marking? What's different from today forward? And I think that's all about explaining to them, well, what does it mean to be a man? Mm-hmm. Like, what does good look like? I mean, you can take that even from kind of like professional work, leadership settings. It's a basic kind of principle. Like, tell them, like, what does good look like? Mm-hmm. Because they're coming at this through the lens and the experience of a little boy.
Yeah.
So they may see their dad, but like the rules and everything is kind of shifting at that moment. And then you're marking that moment, telling them what good looks like, and then helping them understand, both them and you as a father, that you're now in kind of a period of mentorship for the father or kind of apprenticeship for the son. Like, I've told you what the rules look like, and there's going to be a period of time that we're going to mentor you through that so that you more often than not hit those marks than miss those marks. And I think that's how I've kind of approached it. And I used this idea when each of my sons turned 13, they're 2 years apart. So, when we did that, we set up kind of a day long kind of event that I built for each one of them. It was similar for the two of them, but was kind of took advantage of their uniquenesses. Like, they're all different, right? All our kids are a little bit different. And made that very clear that from today forward, you're entering manhood. Others will may disagree with this, but I didn't say that you're a man. The way that I would tend to view that is, manhood is a thing we all aspire to, all of us around yeah. this table. We all aspire to that all the time. Mm-hmm. And if we all kind of did an inventory of the last week and ask, okay, was I consistently nailing all those marks all day, every day? Probably not. We probably fall short somewhere, would be my guess, but we're all aspiring to that. So telling our sons, like, well, you're now in the same game. Here's the rules. Here's what I'm personally trying to get to, and you have to do the same thing now. You don't really have a choice in the matter. You've got to. And if we don't kind of walk through this with our kids, then it can get a little messy.
Yeah.
I mean, I think probably look a lot of our own lives, most men out there.
I mean, for sure.
Yeah, if you don't walk with them or have this definition, I guess, of what it looks like to be a man, then they're just going to turn to friends, social media, culture, right? And we know where that can go.
That's exactly right. You think of all the things that crowd their ears and their minds all day, every day. You've got extraordinarily intelligent social media developers who employ PhD level people whose whole job is to get their attention and keep their attention all day long. You've got the same in media of all sorts, movies, music, streaming services, their ill-informed friends. You've got all these voices kind of speaking into their head all day long, thousands and thousands and thousands of kind of imprints, right? And if we don't, as fathers, very intentionally kind of get ahead of what this looks like, then they're going to kind of form this behavior. They may not be able to articulate that what it means to be a man, but they'll start acting in a way that's trying to show that they're competent, capable, manly, whatever. And I think history is filled with women who can share awful stories of guys trying to prove that they're men. ERs full of incredible things.
Yeah.
With the result from young guys trying to show that they're men. So if we don't, they're going to figure something out. and it's probably not going to be very, very pretty. And it might be pretty far off from what we want it to be. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. I'm not one to kind of take chances. I'm kind of a proactive person. And I didn't want my sons to kind of wander around and just hope that it worked out, that they had a good coach. I mean, that was probably one of the most impactful things in my life. I had a coach that made all the difference in the world. But not everybody's going to necessarily have that. So I think, if we don't, then the world will inform what it's going to look like for them to kind of start being a man. And in my experience, it's not good often.
So this idea got planted in your mind somehow. I don't know if you want to talk about that.
Sure.
So how did you begin to run with this?
Right, so it was literally planted. Literally, my first son, my 19-year-old son, when he was 1 year old, we were my wife and I, and he and I were actually in the process of moving to California, and we met with a friend of ours who we knew here in Cincinnati, who had also just moved out there maybe a year before, and while we were out in a house hunting visit, we connected with them, had lunch, and their sons were a few years older than ours. We're sitting on his back deck talking, and he said, "Well, I just read this interesting book, Raising a Modern Day Knight." He said, "I'm going to do this thing with my sons when they turn kind of 13, this rites of passage." And it just kind of, like it hit me like a lightning bolt. And I thought, yes, I'm going to do that too.
Oh,
like, all right. Wow. All right.
With a 1 year old.
With a 1 year old. And so, cool. But the seed was planted, but I didn't think about it again until 11 years later. Now this is, and I very much kind of weaved this into my faith. I thought God is kind of saying, this is something you're going to do. And it literally went dormant for 11 years. Mm. We moved all over the world. We left California, moved, the East Coast or overseas for a while. And this friend seemed like moved around some other places. And my wife heard this guy's voice, his very distinctive voice, at the grocery store and like the next aisle over.
No kidding.
at about the time my oldest was, he was 12. And this idea was kind of just kind of coming back. And my wife said, "Hey, guess who I saw at the grocery store?" So he and I connected, and I said, "Hey, you're not going to believe, we had this conversation. Like, remember this conversation?" I said, "Yeah." He said, I did that for my son." I said, "Oh, good. I want to hear all about it." Because I'm trying to figure out what a rites of passage would look like. So I got that book and read the book. I thought, okay, this is interesting, but some of this stuff just, this doesn't fit us, doesn't fit our family, doesn't fit our community. And so that really is really kind of the start of it. Was that him just saying, "I read this book," and it just struck me. Yeah.
Very cool. I mean, so you kind of took that and you ran with it, really.
Yeah. So I spent a lot of time trying to figure this out. I mean, I was pretty persistent. I was very determined. I mean, even outside of the context of this, I was very, very determined to have a good relationship with my sons, to raise them well, mostly because it was not my personal experience. I did not have anything like this as a kid. Did not have a particularly good childhood. I had outside of these coaches I mentioned in high school, I did not have a positive father figure at home. It was it was very, very far from that. Very, very far from that. So I was determined to do this well, put a lot of time and effort into my relationship with my sons. And so when this came around, I was trying to figure out, okay, what's this going to look like? I read that book and I thought, okay, well, that doesn't really fit me. And I had stuff all over the walls in my study at home, trying to map out what can this look like? How do I even communicate this? And right about that time, it was fantastic timing. There is this sermon series at our church. I think it was called The Wild Side. I seem to remember that evolved into what became The Five Marks of a Man, the book Five Marks of a Man, and eventually another series kind of focused on that, I guess. And when I heard this first message, and it kind of laid out five characteristics of what a man should be, and I thought, wow, that's exactly what I need. So I'm going to somehow figure out how to use that concept, which defined the difference in these characteristics between the way a boy would act. Let's say you take having a vision. So a boy would very much live for just today, whereas a man will have a vision for his future in some respect, whether it be his career, his family, money, whatever, and will make short-term sacrifices to get to that goal. Mm-hmm. I thought, wow, this is perfect. So I took kind of all that material and wove that into how I eventually kind of built this for each of my sons. And like I said, this, you know, the way that I explain it now to others, because I actually teach fathers how to do this now in this this workshop I call Bridge to Manhood. And I help them understand that, yes, this is a marking moment. But in that moment, like I mentioned earlier, it's incumbent upon us to help them understand, well, what does good look like? So I use that, what's now that book, as kind of the foundation to say, this is what good looks like. And I used that. And then I took some other lessons from here and there. I think might as well have been from the Raising a Modern Day Knight, this idea of using, relying on kind of the community of men that we are in. Mm-hmm. So it, and I can kind of walk through, if you want to, you know, more detail what that looked like. But this was very much about marking a moment, saying from now, from today forward, this is what I expect. This is what the good looks like. And this is what we look like in a community of men to help you get there. Because this is what life looks like for us. And you're now at the table. You're the youngest guy at the table.
Yeah.
But you're at the same table because you're dealing with the same things that us men, grown men, deal with. And I very intentionally in that moment when we actually had a meal together said, you know, said in a voice, I was very, very intentional of voicing these things, that we men deal with things or issues around sex, drugs, money, control, fear, power. And I explained, you know, some of these have very good sides. Some have or don't. The balance, getting the balance of those things can be healthy or unhealthy. Mm-hmm. But like these are topics that men deal with. And it's okay for you to deal with them as well. Well, matter of fact, you got no choice. Like they're coming. And so it's okay that we talk about these things.
Yeah, there's two things I kind of have been thinking about as you've been talking about this, and when you mentioned it before, is one, this is, I'm going to lose a couple friends as soon as I admit this publicly, but there's this John Eldridge book called Wild at Heart, I think, right?
That's a great book.
Okay,
yeah.
So
you're not losing me yet.
Well, this is where I lose you. I'm not a big John Eldridge fan, and I know that's like sacrilegious at crossroads, but
I'm done. I'll see you again.
Yeah, right. For whatever reason, his cadence of talking, the way he talks, is just not something I would vibe with. Although I appreciate some of the points he brings up, and the parts I never finished Wild at Heart straight up just because I couldn't take him anymore. But I do remember distinctly in that book there being something about the father wound, or maybe I'm saying that wrong, but he says at some point in a boy's life, the dad's got to look at him and say, you know, you are a value. I value you. I'm proud of you. Take this mantle and become a man. You know, separate yourself from being coddled by your mother. You are a man now, and I am proud of you. It's something along that lines. And I've,
Go ahead.
Yeah. And I feel like that kind of like that marking moment, would be coupled with this kind of rite of passage, because I will tell you, like John said earlier and what you mentioned, I didn't have a rite of passage ceremony, but I do distinctly remember when my dad gave me his Air Force boots, and I remember something clicked in my head. Mm. Like I'm not kidding anymore. And it's not to the extent of what you're doing, but that was a moment that I remember, because I was like, why did he, it's my dad's Air Force, but he keeps everything. He's like, you know, so I remember that being a moment, and I wore, you know, I shined them all the time and I wore them around, you know, whatever. So that kind of that process there. But for me, I think I was like 17 or 18. So my follow on question to that embarrassing where I don't like John Eldridge moment, and now I've lost friends at Crossroads. and I've read a part of a lot of his books.
You don't need to justify.
Yeah, all right, fair enough.
It's okay. It's a free country.
Yeah, taking a minority position, right?
There you go.
That's right, which is one of the five marks, which is why we're laughing.
Yeah, okay. But I'm curious, the number 13, where you got that from, and is that important, or is it just doing it, period, important?
Well, I'd say the first thing is just do it. I mean, okay. I've walked guys in this workshop that I teach over the last number of years. I've taught men whose sons are in their 20s and 30s, and there's that question, well, is it too late? And it's like, well, and again, so I go about this whole thing so that you don't have to be a person of faith to find the value in doing this and have the structure to find it very valuable. I've lost my train of thought there.
Is that okay? 13.
Why
13?
Okay? Oh, why 13?
Is that okay on a podcast?
Not on this podcast. Yeah. We're professionals. Yeah.
We're going to dock your pay.
That's never happened.
Yeah. So this idea that God is never stops being our father. You never stop being the father to your children, nice. Ever, no matter how old they are. The relationship changes from, you know, a very senior to a very junior to something more peer-to-peer as you get older. But no matter what, like a man will never not need that or value that input or that comment from their father. So no matter the age, do it.
Yeah.
And it's even a great experience to say, well, I should have done this when you were much younger. Let's do this together. So it can look pretty different. Now, if we can catch guys early enough, I think there is something special at about 13.
Okay.
And about that age, things are changing for our sons, right? So first of all, they're often coming into kind of middle school, very soon thereafter high school. So their environment is changing to begin with, right? In our culture, even though we don't do anything for it, we recognize a teenager as something different than somebody who's 12 years old. So there's a little bit of that recognition as well. They're physically changing. They're coming into puberty. Girls around them are changing. So all these things are changing. And if we don't try and get ahead of it at kind of at that moment and we wait, they're living with manly issues through high school and through their early adult life. And we've kind of missed the opportunity to help kind of get ahead of that a little bit. And I've even had some guys who say, well, my 12 or 13 year old son is not quite mature enough. So then you probably really need to do this.
That's kind of what I was wondering.
Don't wait. Because whether your son is ready or not, the environment around them is changing. Mm. And if you don't prepare them for that and help them kind of boost their maturity and preparedness, then you're probably missing an opportunity, I would say. So I think there is something kind of special for 13.
Yes. Okay. So that's like the maximum efficiency time to do it. But if you don't do it till they're 15, you didn't, you know, it's not a missed opportunity.
Completely. Yeah. Do it anyway. Gotcha. Do it. Okay. If they're 25 or 35, do it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that was going to be one of my questions is the magic number of 13 and explaining that. And I appreciate that thought process. I do think one of the other points that I appreciate is just this idea that you're demonstrating to your son, and I try to do it with all my kids right now, is the idea that we're all aspiring to this standard, but we're not all hitting it all the time. And we all struggle with different things. And, you know, and I think that's one of the reasons you bring friends in is because each individual is going to struggle with different things. Like the things I struggle with, my son may not struggle with, but maybe I have a friend who struggles with something and have a wavelength and something and someone that they can talk to. So I don't know that there's a question in there, but it's just,
I'll piggyback on actually what Brandon brought up with Eldridge. I think he also talks about that, like you mentioned the wounds, but I think he also talks about that young men and really maybe even adult men have this burning desire to have an answer to the question, do I measure up or do I have what it takes? Or you could say, am I man enough, however you want to phrase it. And I think that's what this rite of passage, this bridge to manhood experience, helps them to begin to realize that I may be short in some areas and I've got a long way to go, but I'm surrounded by other men and my dad who are on the same journey. And I do have enough for now where I'm at as I keep advancing. I don't know. So,
and that's what if you think back to our earlier comments around, you know, social media and music and friends and so on. Yeah. If we don't help them define this is what it means to measure up, then what is all that kind of tell them? What's the definition there? And it tends to be around money, fame. Conquests, girls. Right. I mean, it's all this stuff that is not necessarily healthy for them or the world around them or constructive necessarily. So I think when we tell them that not only this is what you need to live up to as a man, this is what I'm also trying to live up to. And I use the five marks of a man as a framework. And I tell guys, if you don't like that, use something else, whatever. I don't care. If you want to add to it, take from it, whatever. But I use these things like vision, works hard, will take a minority position and see, this is what it means to be a man. And then they're not kind of left guessing.
Yeah.
And they can be productive and constructive in what that looks like. And also, you know, it helps them when they observe us. I always say that our sons are better imitators than listeners.
Mm-hmm.
And just think about that for a second. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Our sons are better imitators than listeners.
Yeah.
So I can, every time I share that, you get guys to think about that for a second. There's this kind of like, oh gosh.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Dang.
Can you not say that, Joe? No. Don't remind us that.
If we understand that and we tell our sons, this is what I'm trying to accomplish in my own life. Watch me. I'm doing my best. But also watch this guy and watch this guy and watch this guy. If they know what we're trying to achieve, they can learn from us. As opposed to being kind of mystified. So you think about like spending money, all right? If we have a vision for this is what I want my financial life to look like 10 years from now. If we don't explain to them, like I have a vision for this and this is what it is. And all they see is dad won't buy this or that, or so-and-so's other, like his friend's dad will get him this thing or buy this thing or go on that trip. Why not us? Mm. Why are you're just being cheap. And if you can reframe that and help them understand, no, I'm not being cheap. I love you and I love your mother and I love the rest of our family. And this is what I'm trying to achieve for us. And you're seeing me now make the sacrifice necessary to get us there. And I know like you want that thing. And to some degree, I'd like you to have it. And maybe to some degree, I don't want you to have it because it's maybe not good for you. But watch me make the sacrifices necessary to get us there.
So, could you walk us through some nuts and bolts of what you actually did on this day or weekend experience with your sons? And again, with the caveat that you're not prescribing, this is the exact format that, you know, all other men should follow, but this is just kind of the approach you took. Could you just kind of walk us through that?
Yeah, sure. As a matter of fact, when I teach this workshop, I do it over kind of 3 1.5-hour sessions, and I emphasize heavily, guys, I'm going to share with you the formula that I use for each of my sons, but what I am not trying to do is get you to imitate exactly what I did. I did something that worked for me. I'm going to help you to try and build something that works for you, and I'm going to challenge you to set a high goal, but far, far more importantly, I challenge you just to get it done. Mm-hmm. Even if it's half as good as what you picture you have in your mind, do it. Do something. Give them a pair of boots.
Yeah.
Do something in it that will have an impact. It'll make a difference. So with that said, for each of my sons, there's the kind of the overall same framework, but neither of them knew it was coming. Now the younger one understood something happened with my older brother 2 years ago, but we very intentionally kept it a kind of a secret from him. So I came home on a whatever Friday night. And I told him on Wednesday, hey, you and I are going somewhere on Friday night. Don't have any plans. I mean, he's 13, so how far can I go? So when I come home and have a bag ready to go, we're going to go somewhere for a night. All right. So I mean, the first one is kind of concerned. He's like, are you selling me to the circus?
Military school.
Yeah,
exactly. So I come home on Friday night, change clothes, hop in the car, and I hand him a letter to read. And I'd written him a letter explaining that this whole weekend is about your transition from boyhood to manhood. And in that letter, I kind of give just some very brief remarks on the 5 marks of a man. And I said, this whole time is meant for you to mark this moment and to understand going forward what that's going to look like. And we're going to have some fun doing it because the whole thing shouldn't necessarily feel always heavy and like, you know, bass drum beat.
Somber, kind of,
exactly. Yeah. It shouldn't necessarily, but there are some moments that naturally kind of come from it just because of what we're doing here, right? And it's like, okay, I'm not really sure what this understands. So the way that they understand what this means, so the way that I set about doing this is in order to teach these 5 marks, we didn't have a lecture. I built experiences for them. Like, we're going to go have some fun because I think sons in particular, like men, like we connect and we learn and we bond shoulder to shoulder more than face to face. You know, I think it was explained to me once that women connect face to face, men bond shoulder to shoulder.
Interesting.
And I thought, wow, that makes sense. So I didn't author that, but that just kind of struck me. So we build experiences. So for the first one, as I was explaining to my son that, well, about work. So we work hard versus a boy only plays. And I was telling me a story of a friend of mine who worked at my company for a long time, and he had a dream for a business, to own his own business. And he worked hard, he sacrificed, and he created this business that brings other people a lot of joy and pleasure. So I'm telling him this story, right, as we're on our way to my friend's business. Mm. For him just kind of understand, and I explained some of the sacrifices and the risks this guy took, because he left kind of a corporate world job, took all his retirement savings and plowed it onto his business. And then we pulled up to his business. It was an indoor karting place.
Oh.
And now we're going to go have some fun.
That's cool.
So we went inside and went to went karting and had an awesome time. In each case, we then went to a hotel that night and, got pizza, splashed around in the pool, had a good time. And I won't go through each one of these for each son's, but I'll just give a couple of examples. So my younger son has always been a real athlete, really focused on sports. He was a baseball player when he was really young, and he was certain he was going to be a professional player. So we went to a baseball game, and we typically would go to a couple of games, Reds games every year. And we always get, kind of the high altitude seats. Well, this time I bought the best seats we've ever had. Mm. So like already that kind of set a different tone, like, oh, this is different. Why are we going down, not up? And so we keep on going. We finally get to our seats, which kind of shocked him, right? And then when we're there, I ask him, as we're talking about being a team player, and really the underlying principle there is that you'll put everybody else first. You're not looking to be the MVP. You're okay being in the very back of the crowd in support of the whole team. And so I explained to him kind of what this looks like in my life, in my professional life, in my life in our home, so he can understand, well, when I did this, this is me being a team player for our family as a mm-hmm. whole. So we sat down and we're looking out onto the field, and I said, so like, who out here on the baseball field is the greatest team player? And he said, well, the catcher. Well, he was a catcher. And he explains why. I said, that's pretty good. That's a pretty good way to view that. But who else? Who else do you think might be the best team, the most, very much the most team player oriented out here? The first baseman. He was a first baseman as well. So we kind of go through the same thing. And I push him a little further. I said, no, you're thinking too narrow. Keep looking. And then it hit him. He said, the umpires. I said, you're right. Like, nobody knows their name. No, they don't look at their numbers. We don't see they don't get the big salaries and all the fame. Matter of fact, all they get is abuse if they're anything less than perfect, right?
It's true.
They do what they do, and they earn a good living, but they love what's happening, and they put themselves in a position that's really, really difficult, right? So I said, you're right. So that was a way for him to understand in a context that he was familiar with what this meant to be a team player. So we spent that Friday night, all day Saturday, and I kind of built and engineered these experiences for these guys that were some of which – actually what I had planned, I couldn't pull off. People didn't come through, the thing didn't happen, whatever it was, but that was okay. Which actually turned in some great stories later. I said, hey, do you know for this, Mark, this was what I was originally planning and such happened. And that blew him away. Like, really? You did that for me?
No.
Yeah. And sorry, it didn't work, but I tried. And that, like, that made an impact as well, for sure. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of all day Saturday. And I also asked some guys who were kind of in our community to write him some letters. And I didn't give him any kind of context. Some were family, some were friends, some were other just people kind of in our circle. And I just kind of parsed these out on a, occasional basis. And they'd read the letter. And I hadn't seen the letters. And like I said, I didn't give the guys any direction. I just explained at a high level what I'm doing. And if you have any words of wisdom, if you could pass that along, that'd be great. So that led to some really interesting conversations. So we're having some fun, doing some good stuff, having some heavier, weightier moments. And then, so that kind of wraps up the day. And then we returned to our home on Saturday evening, and unbeknownst to them, a bunch of these guys who had written letters were at our house. Mm. So for the first one, my first son, my younger son was gone, my wife was gone, and it was just these men at the house. So these guys had prepared a meal. So we go around back, we sit down at the table, and you can imagine, like, for a 13-year-old guy, like, all these other guys are there and they're looking around, and they just, like they can feel like this is a big deal. Like I don't understand it really, but this is mm-hmm. something. And it was really kind of an emotional moment. So we sit down to eat, and before we actually ate, I said, what I need you to understand, I said, we're not just sitting at the table to eat. I said, you're coming, I've used the terms, into the community of men or the table of men. So we talked about, well, what does that mean? What does that look like? And so we kind of dug into that. And that's when I explained that, well, we as men, some of these guys were in our faith community, some were not. Some were believers, some were not, but they're all men of character, and some of whom very much continued in that vein, some of whom have not, some of whom were close at that point and have since relocated. Mm-hmm. So when guys also start thinking of this, they're like, oh my gosh, I've got to have this like storybook circle, like awesome guys who surround us all the time that are never going to leave, that are committed to us forever. And I think that's nice thought, but the reality is that's not very realistic, because kind of life happens and yeah. people mm-hmm. go through changes and so on. But we had this group of guys, you know, family, friends, faith, and some were meaningful to them, some were meaningful to me, some were meaningful to both of us. And I said, so as men, like what it means is to be a man, and as we deal with these things, again, you know, sex, money, drugs, control, power, fear, and they impact all of our lives, and we lean on each other to help each other, support each other, encourage each other. And I said, and we talk about those things. So it's totally normal for you to talk about them too, because you know you're already exposed to some of these things, and the ones that you're not exposed to, they're coming, really fast. Like, hang on till next week, right? It's coming. So that had the effect of kind of elevating his relationship with all of these guys. And he saw himself differently when we said, we're not going to treat you like a boy any longer, because this marking moment is from boyhood, where we expect boyish behavior generally, to manhood, where we expect manly behavior mainly. And you're kind of in a mentorship period. So that was really powerful. And then each of the guys went around and kind of said something unscripted. I didn't give them any guidance. It was really powerful for the son to kind of hear. And you can imagine, like, they only absorb so much. But they absolutely 100% absorb the sentiment and the feeling that these guys are here to support me in the coming years as I step into this. And they don't even know what they're stepping into, frankly, but they understand something is different. And so that was really powerful to bring them into this kind of community of men, understanding that they can talk to these guys about these things. And I gave free permission, because I just had the relationship with this group of guys. I said, you can speak to them about any of these topics or anything else without my knowledge. I might be the problem, frankly. And they can speak to you without my knowledge if that's what's necessary, because I trust them with that. And that was also pretty powerful. Yeah. And to this day, I don't know whether they've taken them up on that or not. But I can say there have been moments where I was totally out of my comfort zone, or even ability, I think, to deal with some things that just tend to come up in those teenage years. And some of these guys have stepped in and played a more active mm-hmm. role. They felt they had permission to do so based on this foundation we'd already kind of set when the boys were 13, than they would have otherwise. Don't know that I've been able to easily kind of draw them into some of those tougher dialogues. So that was really kind of the wrap. I mean, there's things that go on beyond that, but that was kind of the 24-hour experience.
Well, I went through your seminar, training, whatever you want to call it, the Bridge to Manhood, heard all this amazing information, heard your experience, what you did, and did my own with my oldest, who's now, he's 16, he'll be 17 this June. And what I, and did kind of a similar kind of weekend with him when he was 14. And what I love also about it is after the fact, and maybe you can talk to this too, we use the five marks of a man framework too, but it's given us sort of some handles to have, you know, further touch points, you know, because obviously he's not going to succeed in all those five marks, nor do I, as we've said, as men. But it's, you know, it gives us sort of a language, you know, now we can say, do you think you're, you know, being a team player in this situation? You know, it's like, So, and again, I don't use it to just criticize. I think there's moments too, where you can praise them for, like, man, you know, way to go for whatever you just did, you know? So I don't know if you want to speak to that.
Yeah. And that leads to a healthy dialogue, right? So, and when people ask, okay, what's the outcome? And I usually say you've got a new vocabulary. It elevates these relationships and it helps them understand what good looks like. But when you talk about this new vocabulary, it's an easier dialogue because we don't get all kind of emotional and defensive when you point at the behavior and say, was that kind of a team player behavior versus pointing the finger at the son and saying, you screwed up.
Yeah.
I mean, that's received totally differently than you guys kind of standing shoulder to shoulder, looking at the behavior. It's very different.
Yeah.
And you're right. It you know, this thing can't be just a tool for, you know, you're not doing X, Y, or Z. And I try to really have a balance of also using it as a tool for praise. And you like, dude, you nailed it. My oldest son in particular is he's got a really strong heart of a protector. He's training to be a fireman right now. So even his profession is kind of leading into that. So I try and really praise him for that. And matter of fact, sometimes I need to rein him in a little bit because he will pour into other people or do things to kind of protect them to his own detriment. And sometimes I tell him, listen, like if you want to have more sustainability in helping people, like you got to stop emptying the bucket because you're cutting yourself so short that you can't, but I see that. And so I try and lift him up in that respect because he really demonstrates that.
That's cool.
I feel like we've kind of hinted around it. It might be worth for those that aren't familiar with the book. And again, you said it's not, you know, Bridge to Manhood isn't based solely on the Five Marks of Man, but it's called The Five Marks of Man by Brian Tome, right?
Correct.
And what can you briefly explain each of the five marks, or is that maybe you don't know them off the top of your head? I always have trouble remembering all five. So
yeah. So the five marks are things that Brian said when he was trying to raise his son that he kind of searched scripture to find. Well, what are the marks that can help us understand that we see commonly in real men in the Bible? So one of the first one that comes to mind is work. Men will work and boys will just play.
Yeah.
And I think we also need to kind of reframe that to help them understand that if you use the Bible as part of how you would go about this and work is one of these principles, that work is one of the first things that Adam and Eve were given to do. It wasn't to chill.
Right.
It was work. Mm-hmm. So it can be a fulfilling and fantastic thing, hard thing for sure, but work is one of them. Having a vision for our lives. And by that, we say that a man will have a vision for something he wants in his future, whether that be a relationship, financial picture, professional picture, you know, athletics, health, whatever that is. And he'll do the short-term things necessary that require sacrifice to get to that longer-term vision. The men will take a minority position. By that, we mean you won't always go with the flow. Mm-hmm. Boys will always go with what everybody else is doing. So who else is going?
Path of least resistance, right?
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. Whereas a man at times will say, no, I'm going this way. Nobody else is, or I'm going to stand my ground here, even though it's hard. Yeah. That's the right thing to do, not to be just thick-headed all the time.
Right.
Yeah. And I try and like help them understand, like, yeah, you just can't just go against everybody all the time because sometimes there's some wisdom in what other people are doing. But you know, think about that a little bit. Men are team players as well. They'll put everybody else before themselves, not seeking personal glory again. Whereas boys, like, we all want to be the MVP. I mean, if we're honest with ourselves, we all kind of want to be the MVP, right? Yeah. We all want to talk more.
Yes. Brandon does it.
I'm an excellent B guy in the background, follower. Never been a leader or an alpha. So. Yeah. But I know what you're saying. I do.
Yeah. And so, and then the last is a protector. And so the men will protect others. That might mean to protect them financially. And we often think of physically, and that does happen on occasion in our lives, but it, more often than not, it's a reputation. So at this younger age, kind of 13 years old, that I'm probably not often going to ask you to go fight somebody to protect somebody, like, although it could happen, right? More often than not, it's going to be in their world, kind of on social media, other people's reputation, other people's feelings. So you're called on to be a protector, whereas a boy is more of a predator. Like, they're out to get other people more often than not. So that's kind of a basic instinct that we have at times.
I think with that protector too, it's also that, you know, they're willing to give rather than worrying about getting, mm-hmm. you know, like when my oldest, he was done playing the saxophone, which I was kind of bummed because I enjoyed watching him in marching band, all this kind of stuff, but he gave it to his cousin and he spent his own money to buy new reeds and this other stuff that was going to go with the saxophone. And I just thought that's him in a way protecting, or that's him wanting to give.
Absolutely.
Rather than worrying about what he's getting in return, mm-hmm. you know? So mm-hmm. I was like, oh, job well done, you know?
Yeah.
For real.
So, yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah. So those are the five principles that kind of form Brian's book that I use to explain to my sons, well, this is what good looks like. This is what manly behavior looks like. And you can absolutely add other things around, you know, integrity and trust and so on. No problem. But to some degree, you know, the more you add into it, the harder it is to actually remember all that stuff and do it all the time. But it's not like it's all exclusive, that it's exclusively just these things. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of a foundation to say men will act in a manly way in a certain general fashion, and boys are going to act more in a self-centered, selfish kind of way. So it's a great framework that I've found.
I was going to say, even if you're not ready to use that as a framework for your kids' rite of passage ceremony or whatever, it's good for self-reflection and introspection. It's how am I stand, you know, because a lot of us, you know, kind of waffle through life without these principles or frameworks. We're just trying to be the best we can be, but without any, you know, indicators or waypoints. I feel like when I first read this book, it was like, you know, I feel like I incorporated some of these naturally, but it's nice to have a vocabulary now or something to point to. So
yep.
I think just inherently that, or, you know, and I'm not specifically building up this book, but since, you know, Bridge to Manhood is based off it kind of, I just think it's a good thing to understand. It's a good thing to verbalize. We talk about all the time being intentional, having men's groups and sharing with each other. These are good indicators you could use in your conversations yep. with groups, with other men, and with your children. Yep. So
when often enough, when I'll speak at various groups, and there's inevitably there's fathers of much younger sons in there, and they'll say, well, should I do this now? It's like, well, your son's seven. It might be a little early to start talking to him about some of these weighty topics. But you, on the other hand, again, your sons are better imitators than listeners.
Right.
This book is a good example of kind of setting the foundation so that you are doing the things that your son is observing. And right. because you're going to play a critical role. And I say that when you mark this moment too, the relationship between a father and a son changes from being a daddy to a boy, where you expect those boyish behaviors, and then it transforms to now you're a mentor to a man.
Yeah.
That's a very
different
role. I love
that concept. Yeah. Yeah.
You're now a mentor to a man. And if we think about people who have mentored us in our own lives, if they've been positive ones, they're probably doing the things
right.
that we want to do. They're living their life or taking the actions or doing whatever that may look like in the various contexts. They're doing the thing that we want to then do and do well. So that's the same thing for us. We start mentoring them and sharing with them, like, yeah, I really dropped the ball on this one. And showing some vulnerability and say, I dropped the ball, but this is what I'm trying to do. And maybe that's an apology to them or an explanation that, yeah, you saw me with, you know, I said something to your mother and I apologized to her because that wasn't right. So even showing them where it's not always evident that you're doing the right thing or trying to do the right thing and being kind of transparent with them in the right way. That's part of mentorship. And I don't think we often see ourselves as fathers, as mentors as well. Yeah. We think of it coaches and businesses and that kind of thing in that role, but that's who we become, whether we like it or not.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, my instinct is to go, oh, that's too heavy. That's too hard. I wouldn't sign up to be this, you know, these people's mentors. Why are they watching me? Figure it out for yourselves, right? Like, that's the boyhood in me, you know, jumping to the forefront. And I'm like, no, I need to work hard, put a vision to what I'm doing as a father and all that. So it's absolutely, you know, it's there, and it's easy to just like put it in the back of your mind. Like, if I don't pay attention to it, no harm, no foul. Right. But it, that's not really true. Yeah. Is kind of what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Put some impetus on us and say, I'm going to, you know, look at my actions and how, because like you said, I could preach to my kids all day long, but if I say, hey, make sure you work hard, and then I'm working from home and reading my book instead of, you know, doing my job, like clearly he doesn't really mean that, you know?
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah.
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 Well, first of all, that was awesome. You can't see on here, but the fact that you rattled all those off with all that context, yeah. Five in a row, no notes.
Yeah.
Impressive. I told Johnny look it up for the backup.
Johnny, I had him ready to go.
Johnny Key Player.
In case he forgot one. But.
He nailed it. Team he nailed player. It. And I think in those teenage years specifically, that whole idea of the protector, because there are, and I probably fell into this category because I never had this, that whole protector mode of, and where my brain always goes is with girls, right? Mm-hmm. Your job isn't necessarily to physically protect girls, but it's thinking about their future. And you don't want to be that person that they look back on and think poorly of.
The guy that left him with that scar.
Exactly.
That emotional scar, whatever that looks like.
So,
I mean, even when they do it right, I mean, those things kind of happen
for sure,
but you don't want to be that guy,
right?
You don't want your son to be that guy.
And they're going to see it everywhere around them all the time. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they're all kind of interplay and intermix because sometimes you got to take the minority position in order to do things like that and to stand up and be the protector and be the team player and all that. They're all intertwined. They're all intermixed.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So.
Yes, I want to maybe share a few thoughts around how girls benefit from this and even how fathers of girls should give this some thought. But something just kind of comes to mind. So my youngest son is a senior now, and he's an athlete. He plays water polo. And it's
That's cool.
It's a rough sport. It's an awesome sport. Yeah. I tell you what.
That's cool.
After being a wrestler, like, I look at most other sports and think, yeah, that's not quite as
right. Yeah, yeah.
But then I saw water polo. I thought, wow, that's like wrestling, but underwater.
Underwater, yeah.
Like, you guys are tough.
Yeah.
But he's a water polo player, and something I try and express to him often, he understands it now, because he's in this position that when you're the senior, right, and he's a pretty solid player, and he's going on to play in college next year.
Wow.
He holds an authority and a position and a voice in the lives of the younger players on the team that I had to remind him, do you remember the seniors, when you were a freshman, do you remember how important their opinion of you was? How powerful it was when they gave you some encouragement, or how awful and hurtful and damaging it was if somebody did something that was really negative? And I'm not talking about, rough play. That's part of the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
But something that was just uncalled for, inappropriate. So you're in a position now of fantastic authority and influence over these young guys who are 14, 15. So use it well. It's your responsibility. And said, whether you like it or not, just like being a father, whether you like it or not, they're going to see what you do and track with that. So it comes into play. Even at this kind of early stage, the benefits of this start to come into play. And I think that that starts as soon as they start, well, not even dating girls, just being around girls, right? Especially with social media, they can have a huge impact on who she becomes as a woman. She could be left with scars based on some meat-headed comment from a boy or from other girls as well. But right. You're not going to control the whole world. Like, I'm talking to, you, my son, you have a big influence. And you can be a positive impact on her life, or something that leaves her scarred forever. Your guy friends too,
right?
But it can be hugely impactful on what that looks like. And I'm just talking about social media. Much less if we talk about the sexual relationships. I mean, you got to just admit it. Like, those happen in our world. I mean, with kids that are in high school, right? Let's just not be blind to that. I mean, not that I'm suggesting telling my kids it's okay.
Right.
But let's just be honest, like, either you or your friends are going to be in those situations or tempted with the situations. Let's talk about what the lifelong impact of that can be like. And then switching gears just a little bit but keeping a focus on girls. So when I think of the fathers, if there are fathers of girls listening, I would suggest, and they have as much a vested interest in the character of our sons as their own daughters, because our sons are going to be their daughters' husbands, the fathers of their children. So if there are fathers who don't have sons but have the opportunity to build into the lives of other young men, you will be bringing benefit to future generations you may never even see, yeah, much less your own daughter. So I think we all have interest in building into the strength and character of young men, because it'll come back to impact other people we love.
Yeah.
And well, the one other thing that's a similar view to that, and I haven't done it with my own daughter, but this is making me think is if we can teach our daughters and give them some context of what the five marks of a real man looks like, it gives them context to seek out that in whatever mate that they pick along the way.
Yeah. So I remember something that Brian Tome mentioned from stage after the five marks came out and the man camp, which I don't know if you guys have talked about that. That's kind of an offshoot of some of the principles and relationships that I think the five marks was based on. He said that some of the most vocal supporters of his book and those activities are women, because they see improvement in boyfriends, fiancés, husbands' lives. But I think you're absolutely right. I think it's a great concept for daughters to understand, so that they understand, well, what does a man look like, a guy that I should consider in my life or not?
Right.
Or not yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, one thing I think would be interesting to hear your perspective on is you called on these men to come do this with your sons. I'll say from my perspective, I was brought into a rite of passage ceremony. And for me, it was intimidating because at this point, I knew the kid and we'd spent time together because I was friends with his father and all that. But what would you say for one, how you would kind of select the jury of men you bring in, and two, would you like say one of these listeners are about to go do this and be part of a sermon? Is there any general advice you give them? Because I felt a little out of depth, and also when this subject came up that we were going to be talking about this, I realized I failed on the backside of it, where I haven't followed up with the kid at all, who's off to college at this point. So kind of missed the boat on some of those post rite of passage experiences. But I'm just curious, what do you think about the men involved in the ceremony? How have, if you have any general advice or how that experience has gone?
Well, first I would say that the kid who's since gone off to college, like today would be a good day to hear from you.
Yeah.
It's never too late.
All right. Fair enough.
It's because he's now, even so, this may have happened some time ago, but he's now in college. You think about this year, this pandemic year, he's faced challenges and experiences that are unknown to most people that are alive today, right? And it's been a hard year for him, I guarantee.
Okay.
So hearing from another man who says, hey, whatever that looks like between you guys, reach out to him today. I am certain he's going to appreciate it.
Okay.
Whether he responds in text or not, if that's how you reach out to him.
Like, sure.
That's a whole nother thing.
Yeah.
Do it today. So in the seminar, the third session is actually dedicated almost solely to this, what this community of men look like.
Oh, okay.
And it's, I can see guys often kind of like really wrestling with, because they have this picture of what they want this to look like, this awesome group of guys who like light fires, and we stand around, we have bonfires, we camp in, and we do like whatever we do, like we do those things. And then they look around the circle like, it doesn't look quite as awesome as that in reality. Right. So the first thing I'll explain so I think of a group of guys who came around my oldest son. One is was a friend of the family, who was a guy of faith, not the same church, but a guy of good faith, but was not particularly close with him. He was just a guy of such good character. Mm-hmm. I said, just watch him. Like we don't see him and his family enough. They got a pretty busy schedule. They had like 73 kids, it felt like. One of those big families. I said, just kind of keep an eye on him, because he does it well. But we don't see him very often. Another guy was one of my two brothers who was at that moment in a period of sobriety after two decades of heavy drug use, right? Mm-hmm. At that moment, he was doing it right, sober, in college and living right. And I said, you see where he came from, right? He's not in a fantastic place, but I want to recognize that he's riding the ship. He has since gone fallen off the wagon and has gone the exact opposite direction. That first guy, by the way, I mentioned, who's doing it right, he and his family moved away to another city to go after a job. One guy was his youth pastor who couldn't actually show up. He recorded a little video for him, which is actually a really powerful thing to have for later, but he couldn't even show up. Mm-hmm. My other brother, who's not really a guy of strong faith, but he's a guy of fantastic character. He has worked hard, loves his family, does well, but God's not, at least to the best of my knowledge, he's not the center of his life, but he's nailing life, right? Mm-hmm. Doing all the things that I want to see. But he's not a guy of where God is at the forefront of his life. And then my closest friend, and who is also kind of in their lives from you know, birth, really. And he's really elevated his relationship. It's very intentional about what his relationship looked like then and now, and even reaches out to him when you know, my two sons don't always reply to him. And, you know, when he reaches out, he's consistent about that and intentional about that. And you can really tell a difference in the relationship between him and my sons, mostly because of his intentionality. So if you look at this group of guys that I gathered around, it's kind of, it's blown up a little bit. One guy left, brother is falling off the wagon, is, you know, life is looking pretty awful right now. You know, the one brother is very consistent in their life. You know, one guy stepped in very intentionally. So it's not like it was some picture of perfection. The same kind of, you know, the funny mix when I did this the second time around, I gathered together the guys, at least the way that I went about this, like, who are guys who are mostly living their life right now in a way that, if my son were to watch them, not listen to them, that I would want them to kind of track after that guy. That was kind of my litmus test. And I know some guys say, well, I've only got like one guy. Mm-hmm. And I go, well, all right. Sounds good. Two can be a party, right? So bring that guy. And, right. And if that's what it right. looks like, then awesome. I think that the key is bring in somebody else, ideally. And if you don't have somebody else, well, it looks like you have an assignment.
Yeah.
Go make a friend.
Right.
And I've also had guys say, well, I've got my family member. I'm like, I really don't think that, like, I don't think I want him there because of whatever lifestyle choice or character or whatever. I said, well, you're playing for eternity kind of stakes. Mm-hmm. You're playing for the character of your grandchildren. Because if you do this, what will your son do for their children?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So this has a generation. I said, frankly, if I had I've had two fathers-in-law, one was awful and one was evil. I mean, I use those words very intentionally. And the awful, because I lost my father. He kind of stepped out of our lives when I was about 4 years old. So again, I didn't come at this with like this fantastic experience. And even the awful one shot one of my brothers. So that gives you a sense of like how good the evil one was. Mm, mm, wow. So like I didn't come at this with awesomeness in my background. But there's no way in the world I was going to invite that guy. No way. And if there were other people I could have invited that I intentionally didn't, because I didn't want my son to look at them and say, yeah, track after that guy, no matter who they were. It was more important to me that my son see an understanding of what I define as a man than it was other people's feelings.
Yeah, makes sense. Mm.
Solid.
Mm. It's an important point for sure. And I mean, I know as somebody who has been one of the people, obviously my own son is, maybe not obviously, but if you've listened to this, you know my son is not quite there yet. He's only in fifth grade, but he's coming. It's coming quick. Two things I've noticed. One is, as that other person, it definitely opened the door to have a different relationship with, you know, Matt is who it is. So I feel like I can talk to Matt differently now.
Matt's my son. Tommy was at the table of men for
the
Matt.
So I feel like I can talk to Matt, and, you know, Matt's got my cell phone number if he ever needs to call and whatever. You know, it's different. So versus prior to that, it was just John's son, you know, you say hi, whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. But
Yeah, and it changed potentially and it, from...
We haven't had a ton of conversation. Like, so it's not like, hey, we're, you know, he's not texting me all the time, whatever. But at the same time, I feel like the door's open.
Yeah.
If I ever felt like I needed to say something, I would. So...
Yeah, and I think that elevates it from my dad's friend to potentially my friend.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
And not, you know, a guy who's an adult where I'm a child is like, yeah, I'm younger than him, but he's a guy I've got a relationship with. And I think that's hugely powerful. And I think it's, and the reality is too, unless we're like hanging out, doing the same kind of stuff together and you guys are together on a regular basis, I think it's, if those of us who are kind of pulled into this or asked to participate in this on the behalf of another father, I think the critical activity early on is we reach out to that guy. We say, hey, I'm going here. You want to go with me? And bring them along. And we're all busy. We've got our own kids, families, lives, and so on. But I think we can kind of do that though still. And ask these guys, you want to participate? I'm doing this thing, or maybe you know something about something that I don't, and I could use some help. I mean, that elevates a young guy like nothing else when they know something we don't, and we ask them, hey, could you give me some help? Could you pass on some of your knowledge? Because that makes them feel awesome.
Yeah, for real.
Best way to develop a trusting relationship, ask for help.
Yeah.
Bingo.
So, and then, shoot, what was the last thing I was going to add? Oh, your seminar, right? So we can, whatever you call it. Yep. I don't even.
Workshop. Is
workshop.
Best. That's what I've come up with. That's the best thing so far.
Okay. So two questions for it. First one is it just the dads who do it? Because, you know, there is a lot of prep work that goes into this for the guy. And I think some of that comes out in the sense of for the son, they see how much they put into it. Mm-hmm. And how much prep work there was, or maybe there wasn't. I haven't done it yet. I know I saw what you went through. I know what you've already described.
Hearing going through the workshop and then putting this into motion. I felt like it was a good amount of work, but again, at least I was motivated. I was excited to do it, getting people to write the letters, inviting, you know, trying to figure out what are the activities going to be that I'm going to do with my son, mm-hmm. getting the guys there. So yeah, it takes some coordination, but man, it's completely worth it.
So my question with that, is the son... Actually, I guess the son wouldn't be there because it's a surprise.
The son
to
doesn't
him.
Even know that it's happening. So I give the fathers a little bit of pre-work. So there's this sheet that challenges them to understand their son at a deeper level. And so there's one for the father to fill, just questions to challenge their thinking about who's your son? And because at this age too, you know, 12, 13 or 15 for that matter, they're changing rapidly. Kind of discovering themselves, finding new things. So challenge them to understand like who's your son kind of now? Right now, mm-hmm. then there's a similar one that you could give to other friends and family, mom, aunts, uncles, people that are close with them, that see them from a different angle that you do. And the only thing the son's aware of is they get a similar one for them to fill out. And this is always kind of fascinating because when I ask fathers to start reading or just sharing, so what did you learn from this so far as you think about, okay, how am I going to relay some of this stuff to my son? You know, one guy said, well, I always saw my son as kind of an introvert, not an extrovert, and certainly not a leader. But it said my son sees himself absolutely as a leader, just not in the context that his dad was used to. He's mm-hmm. the kid was kind of a gamer, and in his world of guys he would connect with in the game community, he was a leader, and he described articulately mm-hmm. why that was the case. And his dad, because his dad doesn't play games, he totally missed that. So this was an awesome opportunity for his father to then build in to leadership for his son that he would have thought like that this is a waste of time because I'm not personally seeing him in the moments that I get with him. But this is the workshop is exclusively for the fathers. Sons have no participation in it. And I have to say that I put a lot of effort into just making it executable. Like I'll share some of these stories and actually on the second seminar, there's a guest that I'll bring in who helps kind of really people understand that like we're going to put effort into this and a lot of it may fall apart and it may still be really awesome. And that's pretty powerful because it, when I explained some of my story, and I put months and months and months, I mean, probably better part of a year into this thing. But I think part of the lesson for me was not everybody is going to be able to do that. They get easily overwhelmed and just quit. Because frankly, when you ask guys, what do you think about this? Everybody gets excited and ask, okay, who's done this? And then it changes completely. Mm-hmm. Kind of everybody slouches a little bit. Right. Because I've heard so many guys say, thought about it, read about it, talked to somebody about it, and that was the end of it. It never actually happened. So a big part of my mission is to explain what this can look like and then push guys through in a fairly rapid process to actually build it out, you know, frame it out and build it in a way that can actually be done. So I say, shoot high, but don't let perfect be the enemy of the good. Even if you do it half as well as you want it to be, yeah, your son will think it's awesome. He'll see the time and effort that you put into it, and it is worth every bit of effort. Although I think it's not, especially when you look at the output, the outcome of it. I can speak to that with having done that a while ago now. It is worth every ounce of effort that it takes to do it, and then some. I mean, I see the relationship I have with my sons now. It's not perfect. My sons are not perfect. But I can tell you it's given us some tools and a framework to work through those challenging teen years that would have been way harder had that not been the case. And it's also given me opportunity to praise them in ways I probably wouldn't have thought of. Like I may have thought, oh, that's pretty cool. And that would have been the end of that versus me saying, ah, that's pretty cool. That's kind of a protector thing. And then call that out in their behavior.
Very cool.
Absolutely worth probably the best parenting thing I did by far.
It's awesome.
It's great.
It's really cool.
Anybody have anything else out there? Questions, John, Brandon, anything?
I think he nailed it.
Yeah.
My youngest turns 12 and today as we're recording. So this is firing me up to get ready for round two
Time to do it again.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah. And then it's awesome later when you allow other, I have to say one of the things that I get a huge thrill out of is when we do the first of the three-part seminar, which we'll do one of these tomorrow. I'll ask one of my two sons to participate because what is hugely powerful is for fathers to hear from a son who's gone through this just not too many years ago. And they ask him, well, what was the impact to you? What did it feel like? What difference did it make? What did you learn from it? Man, that tends to get fathers fired up because they want to hear their son saying some of these things. Yeah. Again, I'm not the greatest father in the world. I screw up on a pretty regular basis. Ask my teenage sons, they'll tell you. But it's made a massive impact in my life and their life. And I am certain that they will do something like this for their sons.
I'm curious, John or Joe, did you have the older son or will you have the older son who's already at the table of men participate in the younger brother's ceremony?
I was just going to ask that.
Oh, okay.
I haven't thought that through, but I don't think I would. Okay. But I don't know.
Because to me, that's probably home not the a part writer. That he's part of the table of men.
True, but. That's true. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. But so did you? Make it special, I put a lot of thought into that because so at this point, my oldest son was 15, and you know, in and of itself, not necessarily the most super mature age.
Okay, sure.
But it was, I think you hit the right principle. He was at the table of men, so I did have him there, so that. That dialogue can then hopefully open up between the two of them. So again, when you have the two brothers at the table, along with all these other men, and you put all these difficult, touchy, sensitive topics on the table, and they're both hearing it together with all these other men saying, it's okay. Like we talk about these things because we and you will be faced with these things. It also kind of, it was a moment to kind of re-elevate the older son to say, you were at the table of men helping to bring your brother into this.
Yeah,
that's you're 2 years older, and you also have a responsibility to help mentor him with the 2 years of seniority that you've got.
Yeah.
No pressure, kid.
Right, yeah. That's cool. Yeah, that's kind of where, I mean, I won't have that opportunity, but that's cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's neat. So logistically, do you have... So, you know, you start tomorrow, it's too late by the time this podcast gets out there and people would know. But if they're interested in your next seminar, where would they go? How would they find the information?
Yeah, so probably the best thing is to reach out to me. I don't do any social media for this, but bridgetomanhood@gmail.com. So that's bridge, the2manhood@gmail.com. It's probably the best way to reach me. And I'm doing these seminars right now, kind of two times a year, usually once in the spring, once in the fall, roughly. And what I'm trying to understand and figure out, how can I take this beyond just my personal schedule and teaching? I don't have a desire that this is my personal activity forever. I would love for other guys to adopt it and start kind of teaching it themselves. I'm trying to understand, well, what format might that look like so that this becomes a tool for others to use. And I haven't quite figured that out. I mean, I've got a kind of a long trajectory from, you know, its creation to eventually independence that I'm probably halfway to three quarters of the way through at this point. But the best thing right now is bridge to manhood, bridge2manhood@gmail.com is the best way to reach out to me.
Nice.
Can I give me your cell phone number?
No. Okay. I don't have one. No, I don't have one.
Well, this is awesome. I appreciate you guys, or Joe, you specifically, not just coming on this podcast, but just doing this in general. Yeah, and I think your mission of cultivating manhood within the generation of boys, as John brought up, and before we even started, I mean, I had nothing like this. I always felt like I was figuring everything out myself. And maybe that was a me thing. I don't know. But I definitely grew up thinking that I was figuring it out myself. I didn't have quote unquote a wolf pack. I had a very hands-off father. He was a great dad, but he was a very hands-off father.
I think that's experience for most of us. I mean, it's just not part of our culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, we can look at other cultures who, you know, they drop off their kids 20 miles away and hopefully they make it back, or, you know, whatever that looks like. It's just not part of our culture. And it's something I like to see change, that this becomes the norm versus the unusual thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be awesome. So,
yeah. Thanks, Jim.
My pleasure.
Thanks, Joe. It's great.
Well, sweet. All right. Well, thanks for joining us for another edition of the JDP Just Dads podcast. Hit us up at Just Dads Podcast, at Just Dads Podcast, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. We'll definitely be putting some stuff out on this one. And have a good, whenever you're listening to this. See you guys.
Have a good one.
Bye.
Take care.